Now, accusers of Harvey Weinstein have welcomed the guilty verdicts in the rape and sexual assault case against the former Hollywood mogul. Actress Rose McCowan told the BBC that this is a great day, while others said the ruling brought hope to victims that their voices would be heard. The 67-year-old was convicted in New York City of third-degree rape and a first-degree criminal sexual assault. Weinstein faces up to 25 years in prison over the guilty verdicts relating to two women. His lawyers say that he will appeal. The fight is not completely over yet, or should I say his defense of it, because the former executive still faces charges in Los Angeles of assaulting two women back in 2013. Now, this has certainly, since the news broke, brought the spotlight on sexual harassment, particularly in the workplace. And has the case raised enough awareness and conversation around sexual harassment? I caught up with Michael Yeats from Cliff Decker Hoffmeyer to chat about this. Michael, yesterday's conviction of disgraced producer Harvey Weinstein has once again brought the issue of sexual harassment in the workplace into the spotlight. What started off as a movement against sexual misconduct ignited by Weinstein's actions has culminated in not only a global movement against sexual crimes, but also a shift towards understanding employees' rights in the workplace and, on the other side, the accountability of employers. Michael, what constitutes sexual harassment in the eyes of the law?
Right. So, Benito, I think the important thing is just to understand where this obligation arises from. And this is over and above the moral and ethical duty that the employer has. But we look at towards the provisions of the Employment Equity Act that makes discrimination in the workplace on one of the listed grounds, which includes your sex or your gender or your sexual orientation, because it's prohibited and an offence. But more than that, the obligation also arises under the Occupational Health and Safety Act, which obliges or actually mandates the employer to create a safe and healthy working environment.
So there's quite a bit of pieces of legislation that is guiding policy at various organizations. Do organizations, in fact, put these policies in place so that if there is transgression, there can be steps to correct it and address it?
Yes, absolutely. Look, on the amended Code of Good Practice on dealing with sexual harassment, it actually states that an employer should have a sexual harassment policy in place, and that sexual harassment policy should record, you know, what should happen in the case of sexual harassment being reported to an employer, and the obligations of the employer and the advice and the assistance that the employer should give to the victim of sexual harassment. I think it's just important for people to understand what sexual harassment really is. And it's important to understand that sexual harassment is any unwelcome conduct of a sexual nature that violates the rights of employees, and it constitutes a barrier to equality in the workplace. And that takes a number of tests into consideration. And all of this should be spelled out in an employer's sexual harassment policy so that employees know where the line is and how to conduct themselves in the workplace.
And does that where the employer's responsibility starts to ensure that those guidelines are in place?
Absolutely. You know, employers should realize that where they failed to extinguish their obligations in terms of the Employment Equity Act, an employee has got certain rights of recourse to the CCMA or even to the Labor Court. And fines could be imposed against employers to pay compensation to the victim of sexual harassment. So there's a very strong business case actually to be made to make sure that your health is in order, at least as far as what sexual harassment in the workplace is concerned.
What are the stats at the moment? It seems to be, the last I had a look was around 25% of South African women have indicated that they have been victims of workplace sexual harassment. Do you find in your experience that number seems to be growing, or has instances like the Harvey Weinstein case provided more attention to the subjects with the resulting consequences that things like policy and structures are in place?
Look, I think it's a mixture of various factors, but there's definitely been an upsurge in reported cases and dispute referrals to the CCMA dealing with sexual harassment. And whether this is a consequence of the Me Too movement, the 100 days of activism, the publicity that we've seen both in the national and international media concerning sexual harassment, I think it may be a contributing factor to creating awareness in society, really, that sexual harassment is not tolerated in the workplace any longer. We've seen a number of high-profile cases in South Africa as well, dealing with sexual harassment, which creates an awareness in the workplace that HR managers have taken note of. There's also, with the amended code, there's a duty on an employer to educate employees on what constitutes sexual harassment in the workplace and what is acceptable and not acceptable. So we have seen clients taking up certain initiatives that law firms and other consultants have to offer in order to educate employees, such as e-learning tools that our firm also has developed and offered to our own clients in order to create awareness in the workplace.
What are the detrimental effects, Michael, of sexual harassment, not just on victims, but on organizations as well?
Yes. Look, I think we need to realize that victims of sexual harassment could have certain claims that they can bring either against the perpetrator or in the case where the employer does not act reasonable under the circumstances and deal with it appropriately, certain actions can be taken against the employer, which may result in financial consequences for an employer. Their compensation needs to be paid. But I think a secondary consequence is that employees who are victims of sexual harassment generally have low morale in the workplace, or you lose talent in the workplace, and that could have a very important impact on the business itself, whereby you lose valuable talent.
There could be an instance where all of the various policies are in place, yet the culture of the particular organization doesn't warrant speaking out. With that in mind, how does one sort of tackle this? Or is it also a case of, because if one speaks up, then you'll be victimized even further? How does one manage that in a toxic environment?
Our Labor Appeal Court has actually categorized sexual harassment as the most heinous form of misconduct that plagues the workplace.
Mm.
And you're absolutely right. Victims of sexual harassment tend to not report acts of sexual harassment because the perpetrator is perhaps a person in a more senior position, because this is very often, not necessarily, but very often, a power play between a more senior and a junior employee. There's always a fear of stigmatization, a fear of victimization should you report a more senior employee, because it's generally perceived as a career-limiting move.
Yes.
But what an employer should really focus on is to try and impress on its employees that the procedures and the policies in place are there to protect the victim of sexual harassment. And of course, there's a fair balance of fairness, both for the victim and the accused. But sexual harassment cases should be dealt with either on a confidential or a sensitive manner, which would protect the interests of all the parties. And certain policies and procedures can be written in such a way to include both a formal and an informal process, which could look after the interests of the parties. Mm. Most importantly, the victim of sexual harassment should be assured that they will not suffer any form of retribution or vengeance from the accused in the event they do report events of sexual harassment. And coming to your point, whether it is a culture-driven thing, it really depends on how you implement your sexual harassment policy in the workplace.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. Michael, lastly, you mentioned CDH's first ever e-learning module. Can you share more details around this?
Absolutely. So CDH has developed an e-learning module, which is the first of its kind in South Africa, as far as we know, dealing with sexual harassment. And what this e-learning module seeks to achieve is to educate employees on the do's and don'ts around sexual harassment and the how to deal.
I see.
Yeah, so we've got a whole thing about, through experience, we can empower, we can grow, we can learn, discover.
Wow. From my understanding, it didn't initially start out that way. It was environmentally focused from what
well,
I understand.
It was a bit of everything. We started out, how it actually started was one night my six friends and I, we were having a dinner party, good close girlfriends.
Yes.
And we were just looking back now, it was at the time of Zuma Must Fall and there was so much negativity as they always is. And we just thought, you know, enough is enough. What can we do to make a difference? Instead of just talking about it, let's do something. So we started just raising money. We did a few fundraisers, actually charity events where we sold our clothes at my house, at my friend's house. We invited friends round. And then we started donating funds to other nonprofits. And then I think where the real magic happened was when we started visiting these children's homes, we realized that, yeah, where the magic happens is when we have experiences with the kids, when we're with them, when we bring our presence, our love, our positivity. And it started with a few donations, buying things for the children's homes, some beach cleanups. We're very passionate about the environment, quite a few beach cleanups. And then, then going into the children's home, meeting the children, having these awesome connections with them, we realized, let's get them to see something new. Let's get them to experience something different. And I mean, Cape Town, we're so blessed with so much beautiful things to see and do in the city. So
we certainly are blessed. We are spoiled for choice. What are some of the experiences that you have already shared with the children?
We've done so much.